Good afternoon, and welcome to yet another windy and snowy episode of And Then There's That, a biweekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the FOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scowney, and I'm here at Lakeside Cafe in Columbia Town Center with my co-host, Dennis Lane. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by today's guest, Dr. Calvin Ball, Howard County Councilman in District 2. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the stories making the news this week. Dennis, what you got for us?
Well, you know, Paul, it really isn't a Howard County story, but to me, the big news this month, besides the big kahuna snowstorms we've been having, are the Olympics.
Snow?
Yeah, snow, yes. You may not have noticed. And appropriate to snow is the Olympics are a big deal. I mean, they've, you know, thankfully, after the football season's over and we've all been trapped inside with cabin fever, we've had the Olympics to watch. And I've particularly enjoyed them. But I picked up a piece of news today from the Washington Post about what NBC has been tracking from the Olympics. And one of the interesting statistics is that 25% of men who watch the Olympics have cried.
And are you one of them?
Well, you know what? When I read that statistic, and of course, it's 34% of viewers overall have cried watching the Olympics. But when I read that 25% of men have cried, I wondered, is that because they're being forced to watch ice dancing with their significant others?
So they're not crying about what they're watching. They're crying because they had to do
it. They had to do it. other interesting things that the study point out, 34% of the people that watch the Olympics have delayed doing laundry. You know, how do you delay doing laundry? I can wear this again another day because I want to watch the Olympics tonight.
Well, you know, we were talking earlier, you know, on a prior show, we had talked about the dry cleaner locally.
Giving free dry cleaning.
That kindly was giving free dry cleaning to the unemployed. Well, perhaps if these people are also unemployed, they don't have to worry about doing laundry because they can just take it on over there.
They'll take it on over there, yeah. And there may be more people unemployed because, again, in the same survey, they find that 63% people stayed up later than usual to watch the Olympics, and they reported being more tired than normal at work.
Yeah, I've noticed some people have been late for work lately.
Anyway, just some interesting Olympic stats. In local news, probably the headline story this week was the news that General Growth Properties will be split into two companies. If the board of directors of the company have their way, they've endorsed a plan with Brookfield Asset Management out of Toronto that will create a new entity called General Growth Opportunities that will encompass the master plan communities portion of the company.
Interesting timing of that having happened just after the county council approved the redevelopment in town center.
Well, you had to know something was going to come. They were
absolutely
going to come out. You know, there was going to be a bidding war. The other mall operators wanted to get it. Simon, actually, there's some real dynamics going on here. When General Growth bought the Rouse Company, they were actually competing with Simon to buy them.
So, years ago,
yeah.
Yep.
So Simon's like, now they got a chance again. They're not going to sit. They're not going to take this new plan quietly.
Well, they got cut off at the knees twice now. So
yeah, that's right. But what I thought was interesting was through the public hearings, a local activist, Bridget Mugani, would often refer to General Growth as a bankrupt company, as you know, this, somehow inferring that there was no value to this company. And yet, people who bought that stock at 49 cents a share.
Stop looking at me.
Back in March, it's now trading at $13 a share. I don't know many bankrupt companies that the stock bounces back like that on.
So it's done well. It's done well.
It's done well.
We had a groundbreaking for the library.
Oh, another big local news. It's got to have the longest library branch name in the county. The Charles E. Miller Branch and Historical Center will replace the existing Miller Branch Library in Ellicott City, and it'll be three times larger than the existing library, which is actually the Ellicott City branch. I think is the smallest of the smallest of the three branches. And the new one will be two stories and 160,000 square feet. But what I love about this, so they had a groundbreaking, okay,
sidewalk breaking,
and you know, it wasn't even a breaking a sidewalk. Now, admittedly, I'm in the development business, and I know what a groundbreaking looks like. The first clue that you're going to break ground is you have your soil retention fences up and you have all your erosion controls in place. None of those are in place yet. The dignitaries all kind of dug into this little pile of mulch and some that they set up just for the occasion. It was all photo op, but everybody's out there saying what a great thing this is for the county. So,
and I thought it was great. They gave Ken Allman actually a snow shovel rather than a regular shovel. Yeah,
that was cute.
Very cute, but well done.
Another big story that we've talked about is the CA, you know, Columbia Association could be a regular topic in when we discuss news.
You know, they don't even need to try to screw up. It just happens naturally.
It's second nature.
Yeah, so easy.
This week, I believe it was on Monday, they voted to cut off funding for the Columbia Festival of the Arts.
Correct.
On Wednesday, they restored the funding for the Columbia Festival of the Arts. You know, and part of this was they go back and forth. And this board acts more like a manager than a board of directors. They don't set policy. They try to micromanage everything the association does. And one of the things was, I guess, that they – in Oakland Mills, they have a position of a community organizer.
Right.
And they wanted to repeat that or create another position for Wild Lake, which they think needs a community organizer. And that got me thinking about Oakland Mills and the community organizer position and the problems with the Village Center. And one thing I've learned in my years of development and working in real estate is that you play to your strengths. And one of the strengths of Oakland Mills has always been the ice rink. As long as I can remember, you know, that ice rink, it's the only one in Columbia, a very popular place. And that got me thinking, well, you know, you've got this land that they were going to build the Meridian Square condominium project on, the old Exxon station site. And the talk of the Olympics, this all ties in. We start off with the Olympics. Why don't you take that site and play on the strength of an ice, already got this ice thing going, and put a curling rink in Oakland Mills?
What do you think, Calvin?
And that's a good transition, because Oakland Mills' first community organizer was Dr. Calvin Ball, who is also our guest today.
Dr. Ball, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What do you think about that? Do you think a curling rink would work in Oakland Mills?
Well, I think it's a good idea to engage in innovative solutions and strategies, and a curling rink might be one of the many options that the community should consider.
Well said. Well said.
You know, Calvin, it was funny. Every time we have a guest, we spend a little bit of time going on the internet and just kind of Googling the individuals and trying to find some information about them. And you know, it was funny. As I Googled Calvin Ball, just a whole plethora of stuff came up on two people or two topics. One is you, and the other is something that I knew nothing about, which is the game, Calvin Ball, which is actually a game
I knew.
You're
familiar with it?
Yes.
Well, how could he not be? I mean, if there was a game called Dennis Lane, wouldn't you be familiar with it?
not necessarily.
So I learned that Calvin Ball is actually a game played by Calvin and Hobbes, and it's a rebellion against organized team sports. And the only consistent rule in this game is that Calvin Ball may never be played with the same rules twice. So I thought there was an interesting analogy to government today, because it seems sort of like government plays by its own rules. Not necessarily our council, but I think just in general today, there seems to be this trend towards government just sort of doing what it thinks it's right. It's not always supported by its constituents that have elected the people into office. And they kind of just run off and make their own rules. What's your take on that?
Well,
is that a stretch?
It's funny you bring up that game. When I first got involved in political life and I got a website and I go and Google the website, so excited to see my new political website. I was on page 8 after hundreds of listings of the Calvin Ball game. And finally, I think I'm in at least the top 5, so I still got a little bit more work to do.
I found you on the first page now, so it was good. It's good.
Well, you know, and I can really understand now why it's good for you to put the doctor in front of Calvin Ball. It does provide a distinction.
But to your point, I think that the rules that government work by are that, A, I think people do what they think is right. And I think that when most people elect their elected representatives, they don't know what the future will hold over the next 4 years. They can't anticipate every of the thousands and thousands of bills that are voted on every year, or which snowstorm will happen, or when 9/11 will happen, or what will happen. But they want people who they think will keep a good, responsive rapport with them and make the decisions that they think are right. And I think that those are the rules that, you know, the vast majority of us live by. And sometimes you hear about those of us who don't, and that's why they make news, because I don't think it's the norm.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've just been through a very long process. The Columbia Town Center redevelopment legislation, it dominated the council's agenda for the past 6 months, I suppose, where you heard lots of dissenting, as well as supportive opinions, but a lot of dissenting opinions You know, how do you balance that, and how do you figure out, how do you draw the line and determine that, what you've, the decisions of the route you've taken are truly in the community's best interest?
Well, you know, it's funny you indicate that it's a long process over the last few months. Over the snowstorm, I had my girls in the house and for a week and didn't shave. And I went into the office one day after about a week of not shaving, and one of the staff said, "Whoa, look at all those grays in your beard." And it reminded me that when we started talking
And then there's
about,
that.
Well, and then there's that. When we started talking about the downtown Columbia revitalization, redevelopment, I didn't have any grays in my beard 6 years ago. I was transitioning from the Oakland Mills Village Board and working as the community organizer. And so this has been a long, rigorous conversation. And some of the things that I think we consider when we're balancing the opinions and thoughts and perspectives of others are, A, what is our vision? You know, this is a 30-year plan. What do we think this community should look like in 30 years? What kind of values should this community illustrate?
It's a difficult thing to do.
It's extremely difficult. And then also, the second part is, how do we get there? And so when we hear people's issues and concerns and ideas, you know, we put it through, I think, those two filters. And I think we came up with a plan that reflects our vision and our values.
When listening to some of these dissenting positions, and, you know, they've been called wacky people, they've been called crazy by many, and I guess my question is, when they start to sound like a broken record, and by the way, I do believe that when they're up there testifying, I believe in their heart of hearts, they believe what they're telling you. But it seems so narrow and so short-sighted. Do you, over time, become just dismissive of what sounds like a broken record?
Well, you know, I think it's important. When I first got elected, one of the things that weighed heavily on me was the fact that when we pass legislation or we make decisions, it's my name at the bottom of that. And I remember talking to some folks who they would be strongly in one position, and then a year or two later,
they changed in another position.
Right. And their names were never at the bottom of any of these decisions that were made. So I think it's important for us to really heavily weigh our responsibility. And sometimes when, even if the theme is very similar, there might be a certain nuance that's a little bit different. There might be a way that, you know, in advertising, sometimes the line is, you got to see it 20 times before you buy into something. Sometimes you got to hear it 20 times, and then you have that aha moment. Or there's that sweet spot between dissenting opinions where there is some agreement, and it does get us to the place where we think is best for the community. So, you know, I welcome people coming out, and even if it appears repetitive to some, and I think that it helps make us have a better product.
Now, Oakland Mills, you have the which is part of your district. I don't want to infer that it's all of your district, because it actually, your district includes Oakland Mills, Longreach, Elkridge, and part of Jessup, correct?
Correct. Great. And a little bit of Ellicott City, too.
A little bit of Ellicott City, too. Okay. I didn't realize you dipped into Courtney's
domain.
Yeah, Courtney's domain. But Oakland Mills has, in our local politics and local dialogue, has two of the I don't want to call them gadflies, but two of the more vocal and more aggressive opponents of the Columbia Town Center plan, Alex Hykimian and Barbara Russell. And I understand Barbara's a neighbor of yours.
Barbara and I do live about a block away from each other.
Do you run into each other, you know?
We live in the same neighborhood, and, we do get to see each other every once in a while.
Does she try to continue this conversation? Is it like an ongoing public testimony on whenever you see her? Or?
Well, you know, I found that serving in the role of a county council person, a representative government, we're never off, particularly when we leave the house. So even when I'm going to the gas station or to the grocery store or to a restaurant, you know, constituents do share their thoughts, and oftentimes, you know, I'm able to call my office or write down a note and address those issues.
So being a county councilperson isn't all anonymity.
Not in the least.
Does that get old? I mean, just being out there. Obviously, you love what you do. I mean, you can see it in what you do. But does that get old sometimes, just not being able to go out to dinner and just enjoy family time?
Well, you know, I think it's actually good for the community to see that, A, we're regular people like everybody else, and B, their representatives are in our community. It's right. Good to be able to say, you know, this person who represents me actually understands our community and can see when I explain an issue or a concern exactly not only what I'm talking about, but understand how I feel about it.
Right, and you have kids in the school system, correct?
Correct.
And so you're PTA, and do you go to the PTA meetings?
I usually don't, unfortunately, because I teach in the evenings.
Ah.
And so oftentimes our PTA is on the same evening that I teach. Because of my county council responsibilities, there are certain evenings that I almost never can teach. So those couple other evenings are often when PTA meetings are.
So you're a family guy. You teach at night. You've got your county council at night. I mean, how does that impact your family and the girls?
Well,
is it hard?
It's a balancing act. It can be challenging. However, all aspects of my life are quite rewarding, and they all interplay with one another.
How old are your girls now?
7 and 3.
Okay, that's great.
You have we have an election coming up this November.
You don't say.
I didn't know that you knew that. But,
well, you haven't announced your candidacy, so we weren't sure if you knew.
And you haven't announced, but that hasn't kept your challenger from announcing. He announced, I think, last summer, Anthony Jordan is the Republican, at least the only announced challenger. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
You understand. And are you going to run for the reelection? Are you ready to make that statement? You know, nobody's ever done that on our show.
We're looking for a first.
Well, you know, I tell you, deciding whether or not to continue serving for another 4 years is a very serious decision, and it's one that, you know, anybody who takes their job seriously contemplates carefully, talks with their family. And so, you know, I'm still in the process of doing that, and you know, it's likely there are several issues that are long term that I've been working on for years that, you know, I haven't gotten to a point of completion or you know, closure. So I do anticipate that it is likely that I will run for re-election.
There you have it. You may have heard it. Well, I guess that's not really earth-shaking. I think most people expected you to run for re-election.
That's closer than we've ever come before. I'll take that.
And then there's that.
Incremental steps.
Yeah. We talked about baby steps earlier.
We did.
One of the hot-button issues in Oakland Mills also was the Thunderhill Wawa. Thunderhill Walgreens store. Walgreens Wawa. Which your announced opponent has made, you know, he seems to be trying to play coy with the anti-development folks and say that this might not be such a good thing. Can you speak to that a little bit, the whole Walgreens episode?
Well, my understanding is that when I first heard about Walgreens, they were talking with the village board and starting to go through the process, and you know, some of the things that I heard about what they wanted to do as it relates to the environmental sustainability, the lighting, the timing, you know, I had concerns about. And I actually walked the property with some village board members and the owners of Walgreens. And, you know, we talked about ways that we can make sure that if it were to move forward, it would be as much of an asset to the community as possible. And they made many changes, and they went through the process. And I believe that they have, they're continuing to go through the process. And I believe the Oakland Mills Village Board has been a strong supporter.
You know, there are people that that think that you could just convert that corner back to parkland. They don't seem to understand.
Yeah, there are some who think, well, first of all, when you say convert it back to parkland.
Right, it was never parkland.
It was never parkland. And also, many others see that corner of 175 and Thunderhill as not only the gateway to the Oakland Mills community, but also a very busy and visible spot. And when I've talked to some people in the community who have kids, they would have concerns about having their kids play right there at that corner with that amount of land. So, you know, I think that, again, many community members come out with ideas and thoughts, and that's all weighed in. And I think that the owner, the actual owner of the property, will give those ideas their due consideration.
Kevin, let me shift a little bit from local issues. It's been an interesting time the last year on a national level. We have a new president in the White House, who I know you were a big supporter of. And we seem to be now facing a little bit of a rebellion, I guess, taking place on a national level to some of what's going on. And I think part of it is rooted in healthcare. Part of it is rooted, I think, in just a feeling that government is playing an increasing role in our lives. Not wanting to throw things at people, but you were quoted some time ago in the Washington Post saying government is there to help people who may not be able to help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the line between helping people by giving versus helping people by training and educating and giving them the resources to succeed on their own? I think Dennis and I were actually talking earlier, and I'm going to mess up the quote. I'm going to ask him to do it, but it's the the fishing.
Yeah, you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, you teach a man to fish, and he sits in a boat and drinks beer all day. No, I'm sorry. You teach a man to fish, you feed him for the rest of his life.
But, you know, it's funny that you bring up that quote, and I don't know how many of you have tried to learn how to do a new task when you're hungry, when you don't have a fishing rod, when you don't have a boat. But most people do not learn well when their basic needs aren't being attended to.
I agree.
So I think sometimes you got to give a guy a fish or two so that you can teach him how to fish.
Well put.
How long do you keep giving him fish?
Oh, boy.
Well, no. I don't disagree with you mm-hmm. at all. But I think the struggle comes in. Where do you draw that line?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that there's a bright line, but I think the frustration out there, at least part of it, is that we keep giving and giving and giving, mm-hmm. and we're never converting that free fish into the fishing rod.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you know, it's almost like, you know, to keep up with the training and education analogy, if you have a class of 30 kids and you teach a lesson once and 20 of them get it the first time, do you say, well, you know what, the other 10 of you didn't get it the first time, you're done? Well, maybe over time, those kids actually cost more on the system because we didn't spend one more day trying to teach them how to do, whether it's the multiplication tables or balance their checkbook or reading and writing. Now they might become criminals, or their earning potential is diminished, or what have you. So I think as long as you make smart investments in our future, oftentimes we'll reap those benefits.
Well put.
One of the other things I wanted to touch briefly on before we got too far, we kind of were circling back to the Columbia Town Center thing. It's interesting to me that as we go back through the six-month process, that initially, and this kind of speaks to helping people, the affordable housing issue was really a hot button. And in the end, you were able to bring those parties together. I understand that was quite a dynamic negotiation. Can you speak a little bit about how you – I mean, you started with the housing advocate saying, you know, this is horrible for housing. And in the end, they were saying Calvin Ball, you know, for president.
And you've been a champion of housing for a lot of years. How did you get there?
Well, you know, it's important. You often hear people talk about the importance of workforce housing or, full-spectrum housing. And that's a wonderful value. It's a wonderful idea. Now, how do you make that a reality? And I think we had some challenges over the last several months deciding what that should look like. And, you know, one of my things was, look, let's get people in a room who are solution-oriented, who really want to do something positive for a community, and let's get them to brainstorm and work things out. And I just tried to facilitate that discussion, and you know, I have to commend and put all of the kudos back on the full spectrum housing advocates and those in the business community and general growth who kept coming back to the table, kept working together to come up with something that all of them could support and feel good about.
Well, you know, isn't it interesting though that they came back to the position that general growth started with?
Well, somewhat. I think, you know, and I've been a mediator for a little over a decade, and oftentimes people, they grow as they learn. And I think as this process evolved, many people on both general growth side and the full spectrum housing side and other business folks grew as they learned more information. And so I think, you know, general growth started off in one place, and, you know, full spectrum housing advocates and others started off, and we all actually ended up in a very, very similar place.
We're getting to the end of the of our time here. Just kind of to wrap it up, you know, we fun things. Have you watched any of the Olympics? Has that helped take the sting out of this horrible budget thing you've been going through with snow removal in the county?
No, I haven't had the opportunity.
Not
yet.
Watch curling.
It's so funny.
I think you might do that now.
I watched a little curling with my wife the other night, and we were trying to understand the appeal of watching it for several hours, and we couldn't quite get there.
A gentleman in my office said it's like watching bowling in slow motion. Well, once again,
and then there's that.
And then there's that. Calvin, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
Hi,
what's your name?
David Youngman.
Have you just about had it with the snow?
No, I want 100 inches.
You want 100 inches?
Yeah. What?
Snow.
Yeah, don't we? I think we have 83 so far, right?
And our prior record, I think, was 62, so we've blown that about by 25%.
Right. So if we got 83, I figure two moderate storms, we get 100. I feel like we got so gypped today, I can't even believe it. I was so bummed.
So you're going for the superpower record. Got it.
Let me ask you one thing, David. Do you have a snowblower?
No.
And yet you want more snow?
I just drive over it.
Ah. Okay.
Yeah. And then there's that.
Hi, what's your name?
Catherine.
Catherine, have you just about had it with the snow?
No, I love it.
You love the snow? Mm-hmm. So you want more?
I do. And the pickle is that in December I went to the Giant, and I went to go buy a snow shovel, and all they had left were the kiddie ones. So I've actually made it through these past two snowstorms with my kiddie shovel. And all my neighbors out there are broken. They want to borrow my kiddie shovel.
Note to file, Dennis. We need to buy Kat a new snow shovel.
Kat, let me ask you something. Do you have a neighbor with a snowblower?
No, but I would say this. The first storm, my neighbor's business partner came over in his Jeep and brought the snowblower and helped everybody get out.
Anybody buy him beer?
I brought him a lot of beer.
Thank you.
And then there's that.
I'll stop.
Hi, what's your name?
Heidi Gash.
Hi, Heidi. How are you today?
Good.
Heidi, we're supposed to have a little more snow today, and it seems to have sort of petered out. Are you happy about that, or are you disappointed?
I have mixed feelings about it. I'm from New England. I don't mind the snow. Let it snow. We'll just put on our boots and go. But, Maryland doesn't have the equipment and the facilities to handle it, so it's been difficult.
I'm thinking you want to break out and let it snow.
It would be okay with me.
Do you have kids?
I have two children.
Are they in school?
Today.
Right. They're not at Appleton or Glendale High School, which, of course, have been closed because of power outages. But they may be in school till the 4th of July.
June 23rd. I'll take it.
I think Howard County's only applied for 4 of its 5 allotted days to waive the 180-day requirement.
Oh, it's only 4 of them. Okay. And then there's that.
And there's that.
That about wraps up another episode of And Then There's That. On behalf of myself and my co-host, Paul Scalney, we'd like to once again thank Michael and Min So for allowing us to commandeer this corner of their Lakeside Cafe in Columbia Town Center on a Friday afternoon for the podcast. We'll be back again on March 12th with our special guest, Greg Hamm, Vice President and General Manager of Columbia for General Growth Properties. We hope you'll join us.